Blog Talk Radio.
Life seems to crush your dreams, so find your balance for all your needs. A little work, some family fun. Find your love, keep your life on the run. Told you how the story goes, so write your own script before you grow old. Live your life, laugh out loud. Own who you are, stand up proud. You gotta find what works for you. Find a balance that lets you be you.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. And it's a great night here in Lexington, Kentucky, where I, Stephen Zimmer, am broadcasting live along with the lovely, vivacious, the wonderful and hardworking Holly Phillippe. Holly, you should be on. Mike should be live.
I hope.
She's
there. Right here.
Yeah, there she is. She's fired up. Yeah, she's been working on Imaginarium panels all day long, getting the final stuff set. And later tonight, late tonight, I think, there should be some panel surveys going out, so that's always an exciting time. A lot of authors wait, and filmmakers and editors, publishers, artists, and musicians eagerly await that. So, yeah, that should be going out later tonight.
Every year.
So, yep, every year. It's a yearly tradition. So, but, hey, I mean, you know, our podcast is, of course, affiliated with Imaginarium Conventions, so we want to keep you up to date. And, of course, you know, it is a part of Seven Star Press, so we also keep you up to date on some news there. So, which we do have news from both before tonight's guest, who, by the way, is fantastic. He does happen to be a Imaginarium spotlighted guest this year, but just absolutely a consummate professional, super talented writer, and can't wait to bring this guest in tonight. So that'll be coming up here in just a few minutes. But first, we did want to give a shout out to Lawrence Wheel. And he had a cover reveal today for a brand new contemporary fiction novel titled Pan and the Message Chair. And yours truly served as editor for him on this project. It's extremely well written. I was really, really impressed with Lawrence's writing, and it was a pleasure to work with him. And Olivia Pro Design did the cover, and I'm telling you, the colors, the fonts, everything just looks sharp, and Holly can vouch for me. The only problem with an audio podcast is we can't show it to you right here, but it's online in all the Seven Star Press channels and in our Facebook group, Seven Star Sound Off, and some other areas. So it's on Twitter and all around LinkedIn, Instagram. So get on there, check it out. It's book one of the Wyler's Ford series. Again, it's contemporary fiction, really powerful story. It's about the thoughtful kind of exploration into the meaning of life, love, and love lost. And it's a story that's going to get you in the feels. So, it's definitely not the light beach read. It's a really good, very heavy emotional type of story, and it involves a couple of one enigmatic character, another one that is going through a really difficult time after losing his wife. And there's this tree trunk. It's like a chair. It's in shape of almost like a chair that becomes a medium by which these two characters trade messages with each other. I'll leave it at that because that is in the synopsis. But check it out. I mean, just a great book. I think a lot of people will benefit from reading this book. I think it's got a lot of depth and a lot of things to say. Very good, heartfelt book, and it's coming out May 31st in print and ebook. Absolutely fantastic book, and yeah, Holly, I think you would love this book. She's not gotten a chance to read it just yet, but this is one that Holly will have to put on her summer list for sure. It's right up her alley, definitely.
I did read enough to I read his query letter and his submission years ago, and I'm like, Steve, This is one I think we're gonna want. And yes, indeed,
yeah.
It's a phenomenal book from what Stephen has told me. And yeah,
yes,
we're glad to have him aboard.
Absolutely. Lawrence is a fantastic individual. He'll be at Imaginarium too. He is a panelist. And then we, of course, have been talking about the Imaginarium Marathonarium, and that cover art was finalized, and we just got the final version in late today, and it is beautiful. I'm so happy with how the cover turned out. Again, another one from Olivia Pro Design. She does all my Ragnar and Raiden tales covers, and just amazing, amazing talent. But yeah, this anthology cover is beautiful, and we're going to try to get a cover reveal done Friday, if not first, as soon as the beginning of next week. But it is absolutely beautiful, and Holly can vouch for that as well. She's seen it.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yeah,
gorgeous. Absolutely.
Good-looking book.
People are going to be blown away.
So, yeah, we're having a good run of covers. Covers, yeah, I just got the new one in for Janie Franz, and yeah, just getting ready to have more covers coming in probably in the next week or two. So yeah, I'm getting ready to have a whole bunch of stuff coming out. So it's an exciting time as we're getting ready to rock and roll for the summer, and of course that coincides with Imaginarium, always a good thing. So we, as usual, have a bunch of updates from the last week. We have two different individuals we want to recognize. One is our latest Imaginarium 2023 individual patron, and that is Dragonfly Press. And that is a small press that is headed up by the one and only Ren Melian. And they are just a great press and put out a variety of genres and titles, and they are a Imaginarium individual patron. We also had a new sponsor join our official sponsor family, and that was Richard B. Warner, and just an amazing guy. And really supports the convention, and he's a realtor, he's a realty agent, and he's with Call It Closed International Realty. That's the parent of his affiliation, and you can find him at howtoaffordhomes.com. howtoaffordhomes.com. Richard B. Warner, and yeah, he's part of our full sponsor
staff.
Family. So yeah, welcome aboard.
He's
we love this
part
guy.
Of our Imaginary staff. Yeah,
he is.
You will see
he
my
is.
Imaginary. If you have questions,
yes,
he's the tall, dude that has the dark hair that will be hanging around registration and running around with a blue shirt.
Yep, but it's quite a compliment that someone from, you know, who was our volunteer coordinator on staff at Imaginarium came forward this year to be a full-blown sponsor. So that was a really, made me feel really good.
That was definitely a
nice validation. You know, those things definitely help when we're in the middle of the maelstrom, because it is a maelstrom, as Holly can tell you too. But we have more for you folks. And we've got no less than 11 new panels and 3 new workshops. So I've got a lot of programming to give to you here. Yes, we posted these up. The descriptions are online. New workshops added for the convention are Love and Blood from presenter Jimmy Gillentine, The Power of You, presenter William Joseph Roberts. You'll be hearing that name shortly. World Building, presenter William Joseph Roberts. Those are 3 new workshops. And now for the panel topics. And again, please do read the descriptions. Most of the titles will give you a pretty good idea what they are, but sometimes it's a little ambiguous because it's kind of a fun, catchy title. Go read what it's about, because these are killer, killer, killer panels. But Cover Art That Sells, How to Write Historical Fiction Effectively, a pitch panel, and moderated by William Joseph Roberts, and that is on the fine art of pitching your project to publishers. Why Write Nonfiction is another new one. And then we also added this week are Adapting a Book to Film. And I saw that Carol Preflatish is in the chat room right now, and she could certainly talk about it. She just finished adapting her great novel, Homecoming to Murder, first of the Nathan Perry mysteries, to a screenplay. So she's probably well qualified for this. Hope she dives in on that one, because she just did it. Employment Options for Writers, How to Distribute Your Film, How to Write a Game Module, How to Write a Fascinating Short Story, publicity and marketing for today's book market. That's one that will probably need a stadium because it'll probably be one of the most popular ones, I'm sure. Writing faith-based fiction, and then writing YA. So that's the rest of the panels that have been added. So as you can see, we posted 11 new panels, 3 new workshops just in the past few days. And yeah, that's going to be rounded out. There's going to be more posted up over the next couple of days and going public with full descriptions. And we also now are starting to put in all the room times and dates that these panels are rooms and dates and times that these panels are taking place. So if you are looking at getting a single day event ticket, yeah, you can check that out. Just make sure you get some of the main programming you want to see. And then last but not least, today we announced Stephanie Fager as a spotlighted guest, and she is a phenomenal author, publicist, and book marketing expert. And she had a 15-year career in communications and marketing, and she now has a whole team of marketing experts that work with her at Empower PR Group, and that's the company that she founded, and she helps authors grow their businesses around their books, empowering messages. And so, yes, she is great for developing your brands, your platform, all that kind of stuff. And she's also the author of a number of books, and her newest one, Make Your Author Impact, Sell More Books, Increase Your Reach, and Achieve Your Why. And it's a book that is extremely relevant to the authors that are going to be attending this summer. But she is going to be a great addition. I think Holly's going to be working with her on one or two workshops, and those will be posted pretty soon. And, yeah, just going to be a great, great addition to the convention. And for those interested in doing better in the area of marketing and publicity in today's market. So, yeah, she'll have a lot of current info. But that's it. That's a lot of updates, Holly.
A lot.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, it's an avalanche. And looking into the chat room here tonight, yeah, we got Gerd Metalbeck Harrison. We got Amy McCorkle. Say hi to them. Clayton Barnett. Look, Michael Nost. Michael Nost is in the chat room. Hey, Michael. He's amazing. Yeah, spotlighted guest. Don't want to miss him this summer either at Imaginarium. And tonight's guest, who I will save the introduction for, and, of course, the wonderful Sandy Lender, Genre Blender. And Sandy, yes, she's the editor of that Marathonarium anthology that's in conjunction with Imaginarium. And I just sent her the final cover artwork tonight, so she could have a copy of that on her end. So, yes, she can probably vouch for how cool it turned out. So, but now we're going to go ahead and recognize Sandy some more, as a matter of fact, because, of course, we always want to spotlight those who brought you tonight's show. And tonight it's the tandem of Sandy Lender and Ren Garcia. So first, I'll give you a little bit from Sandy.
Author Sandy Lender invites you to visit her website at authorsandylender.com to pick out a new favorite story to read this spring. You're sure to find a strong young lady, a clever vampire, a self-assured fairy, or a fabulous dragon to join on a new journey. Start your next adventure at authorsandylender.com and make some new quest friends. Welcome to Sandy's various fantasy worlds, where some days you just want the dragon to win.
Thank you, Sandy. You're the best. And as I always say, I can vouch for the quality of your writing. Definitely money well spent when you buy one of her books. And now we're going to go to another I can also vouch for, the amazing Ren Garcia, who we're still trying to get, nudging him to get to Imaginarium. So if you do chat with him online, encourage him to come out of his hibernation from events and come to Imaginarium this summer. So here's Ren.
The League of Elder dares to be unusual. It's easy to be swept away in this bold and uninhibited landscape where fantastic heroes become old friends and sinister villains inhabit every dark corner. Dare to explore things best left alone. Each book is your lantern, lighting the path to a world never before seen. So what do you say? Are you weird enough for us?
Indeed,
yes.
We are, Ren Garcia.
Indeed we are. Yes, we are definitely weird enough for you and definitely looking forward to seeing you at Imaginarium, hint, hint. But now we're going to be getting our call in from our guest here in just a moment, so be on the lookout for that. Right now, it looks like the chat room is popping tonight. If you have any trouble logging in, just refresh the page. And sometimes it gets a little finicky, but that's all right. Better just to be it. We'd rather have you in there just a hair late than never. So come in. We take comments and questions from there. And it looks like we do have our guest on deck. So I'm going to go right into the introduction because this is going to be a great convo tonight. Tonight's guest is an Imaginarium spotlighted guest this summer and also an award-winning author, editor, and publisher. He's an eclectic writer of science fiction, fantasy, and post-apocalyptic fiction, and he is the lead publisher with the award-winning Three Ravens Publishing. So now you know him, the man, the myth, the legend. He rocks, William Joseph Roberts. William, you are in the Star Chamber now, and your mic should be live, we hope.
See, now I want to go run away. What in the world? Wow, you talking me up something pretty. You use that mouth prettier than a $2 whore there, buddy.
Well, I got to keep my egg. Well, you know, Nosta's in the room tonight, so I got to up my game, you know, and keep it at top level here. You know, we want to give the red carpet treatment to you. You're welcome. You're welcome, and great to have you back. It's been a little while since you've been on the show. Last time I saw it, I was going through the data for this week, so it's been a little bit. So I know, of course, you always have like 1,000 projects in the fire through yourself and Three Ravens and events and everything else. So I know you're going to have a lot to talk about, including, yeah, some stuff that you've worked up with Holly as far as this convention goes too. So we got a lot to cover. So I'm just going to throw it at you and give us a little up to date on what you've been into lately.
Well, here lately, the biggest project I've had going on has been the Car Wars project. And for anybody that doesn't know what Car Wars is, Steve Jackson Games created Car Wars back in 1980 as one of their first big hits. And this is like way before Munchkin or Illuminati or any of the others that they've got out. If you've ever played things like Warhammer, Battletech, things like that, where you have a miniature strategy combat game, the majority of it was set up like that, you know, where you had car combat going on. But you also had the RPG side of things when the original edition came out. Steve, we're at Dragon Con last year shooting the shit, talking about things, and before you knew it, we were kind of talking about doing fiction in Car Wars, which is, it's a light cyberpunk, light post-apocalyptic, where everything's about bread and circus when it comes down to it. You know, the corporations want to keep everybody happy, watching the shows, all that kind of stuff, and it's all about the combat and the death sports. So we ended up coming up with an agreement, and I've got a licensing contract with Steve Jackson Games now for Three Ravens, where we're writing fiction in the Car Wars universe. The main overarching series is called Car Warriors, the Auto Duel Chronicles. The main series that we're working on right now is the Dead Man's Run. So basically we're going back to what one of the main inspirations for Car Wars, which was the original Death Race 2000, you know, with David Carradine. So you take Cannonball mm-hmm. Run, arm the cars, and let them fight it out.
Nice.
So the main storyline, we're doing a series of trilogies. So like I'm going to be doing a trilogy, Christopher Woods, Benjamin Tyler Smith, David Hensley, Marisa Wolf. We've got 4 or 5 main core authors that are going to be on this main arc. And they're coming from different cities. I'm starting my crew in Atlanta. And the whole end game by the third book is to end up in Sturgis for the big competition. And, you know, they have to get through the wasteland and raiders and roadblocks and everything else in between to get there. and they're going to end up with, you know, different arena challenges and stuff in round. So we're going to get to see a lot of the Car Wars universe fleshed out more than it ever had before. Now, see, this has been, had been attempted once before. Back in the 90s, Tor had gotten David Drake to write the very first Car Warriors novel, which was a square deal. I've actually got it. I found a copy of it. I can't find the other two. Steve Jackson actually had copies of the other two. Send them in. Let me take a look at them and stuff like that. All of that has been wiped from canon. We're running new canon. But it's crazy and exciting because we're following in the footsteps of TSR, of Tor, and of Marvel Comics, who have all done something in this franchise. So, that's, you know, awesome. It's like we got some big shoes to fill with this.
Yeah, congrats. That is amazing.
But my story, Burning Roads, it's in the final bit of editing. The cover art hopefully will be in this week, if all goes well. Steve Jackson has already read through it. He has greenlit it, loved it. It's just a matter of getting the final process going. I am working on a Kickstarter for the entire project right now. There's going to be different bits of swag. There's going to be Tuckerizations available. Lots of fan-based stuff, especially for the old-school gamers that played the game way back in the day, including, you know, the new guys playing the 6th edition, which is the latest one. And, you know, part of the overall running this project, you know, I have to tell some of the authors just as a reminder every now and then, it's like, okay, think about it like this. We're writing the Saturday morning cartoon to sell the toy. And, you know, that kind of clicks of what kind of content we can get into and how in-depth and, mm-hmm. you know, bloody we can get on some of the descriptions and stuff. Because in reality, yeah, I mean, we're writing stories in this universe, but at the same time, we're pitching the 6th edition. You know, and it's straight-up mm-hmm. combat. There's no RPG element to that part. It's just tabletop combat. And it's a good system. I mean, you want to waste a couple hours and trying to figure strategy out. If you've ever played Battletech, Warhammer, or any of those kind of games, you'll love Car Wars if you haven't played it before.
I have not played Car Wars yet, but that sounds awesome. I mean, yeah, we just finally got into some D&D again, not about a year or two ago, but so
yeah,
we're getting back into some gaming. So,
but
that would be awesome. Yeah, that sounds really interesting.
Well, we're definitely got to play it. We're going to familiarize ourselves with it.
Yeah,
this is going to be a fun series to play in because it's really an open canvas to work with. And as long as we adhere to the little bit of rules there are, we can just go. You know, you got to keep it in America. Okay, cool. You know, things are limited on certain things like, you know, most people eat algae. Real food really doesn't exist unless you're stupid rich. You know, everybody subsists on algae and algae-based products kind of thing. So, you know, little things like that are hard to write in at certain points because we're so used to just regular little things. But that's what kind of fleshes mm-hmm. out the universe so much.
So how is the release schedule going to roll with something like this? How is it going to unfold once it's
right
get now, down with Kickstarter?
Right now it's looking like it honestly depends on when I get my cover art because the first cover artist kind of ghosted me a few times and I can't wait anymore. It's like, I've been under weather and I'll get you a sketch this weekend. I'm like, no, that don't work. So, you know, I found another cover artist that was comparable, half the price, and could get it to me, which should be by the end of this week. And that'll be awesome. He loved the concept.
Are you going to be ready to maybe promo this? Possibly you could do like a promo or some kind of demo at Imaginarium?
Demo for what, the game? Or
we can talk
to the universe because, I mean, we'll have at least two of us there that's writing in it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
because Chris Woods will be up there with me.
Yep.
Right. And the game host would love that.
We can definitely talk about it.
We have a few people that do that.
But release schedule, it kind of all depends on when I get the cover art. And it's going to be after Liberty. Uh-huh. It might be after Imaginarium, just barely. But there's also a anthology and work that we're shooting for a Dragon Con release. Details to come on that. I've already got the second novel in my inbox. We haven't started editing on it, and that was Dave Hensley's. Chris Wood should be next in line with Ben Smith coming up for the next one. And the goal right now is to release one of the core arc stories once a quarter. And if we get, you know, we've got a bunch of other authors that they're not in the core story arc for Dead Man's Run. They're doing these side tangent things. And, you know, it's still fleshing out the universe. It's good storytelling. So, mm-hmm. Up to 8 Car War stories a year will be released. We're not going to flood it where, you know, the readership can't keep up. And it's just that, oh, my dear God, I don't know where to even start. There's so many books. You know, we're not doing that. Each of the trilogies are going to be independent. You won't have to read the others to understand what's in those. So, you know, you could read just a trilogy and enjoy the series, or you could read all the trilogies of Dead Man's Run, or you can read everything that we put out, or you just follow this one author in that universe, you know? So there's, it's not like you're going to have to read 50, 60, 70 novels to keep up with what the hell's going on. You know, people have asked me before, it's like, you know, well, don't you want to release it? Like, you know, rapid release. And it's like, no, I don't. Cause I don't want to burn our readers out. I don't want to flood them with stuff that they get sick of seeing. And at the same time, you know, I'm a writer. And so are Ben and Rachel. Okay. So Three Ravens Publishing, there's three of us. There's three partners. And you guys got to meet all three of us last year because Benjamin Tyler Smith and R.J. Layden were there. And the original goal of Three Ravens was to be a platform for us to publish our labors of love that we didn't want to give away to somebody else. Well, in the process, we brought others on board and opened the doors, and you know, we're helping others, and we're building a platform that's author-centric, that we're helping each other as a community. And you know, trying to boost the signal, and you know, even the percentages that I cut out to the authors are author-centric. We're not making that much for Three Ravens coffers. It's enough to get that next cover or do this next thing. But really, I plan on making my fortune on my writing. Three Ravens is a platform for us to utilize. You know, if I'm not publishing somebody else, it's okay. It doesn't hurt my feelings any, because I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to publish something else of my own and get it written. Uh-huh. And that puts more money in my pocket so that I can keep doing what I do. Because, you know, end of the day, my goal is to write for a living and publish.
Yeah, make a living doing what you love.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, I can sit here and work 12 hours a day for the man and make a damn good living at it, but I hate it. I would much rather be diving in, visiting my characters, going on these adventures with them, you know, and getting out of that universe for a little bit, helping another author do their edits, give them their feedback so they can grow, they can learn, and they can get better at the craft, and then get them out there to the world. You know, I've been told more than a few times it's not a sustainable business model. But, you know, we're doing it. We showed growth this past year. We showed a good chunk of growth, which is awesome. So we went from nothing to we're doing something.
Right on. That's all you can ask.
Yeah, well, I think the work speaks for itself. I mean, I can definitely vouch for – you know, the impact you had even with our convention. Just, I mean, obviously you went up more than a few times to get trophies in the awards ceremony. And, yeah, the quality speaks for itself of what you got rolling here. And And you've got a great group put together. And yeah, because everybody there was just fantastic to meet in person. And yeah, the writing is exceptional. And so, yeah, I think you're making a statement there for sure.
Yeah, and
with what you've got.
And you know what? One of the things, like, this last year has, since Imaginarium, it has been crazy. I mean, y'all know we had the death in the family. I took care of hospice. You know, we had to take care of the widow and get her moved and all the extra stuff. But when we finally got back to doing our thing and you know, I got back into doing some writing and some publishing and all that, which was like, it was by like November, December, and I was starting to crank some stuff back out because we were just so busy with the family stuff and life.
Mm-hmm.
We have had so much crazy growth since Imaginarium. It blows my mind. I mean, we had an article done on us over on Authors Published, and I didn't know nothing about it.
Mm-hmm.
They did an article about us. And over a weekend, we got over 200 fresh novel submissions from around the world.
Wow.
We've been lumped in with traditional publishers. It's like, okay, cool. I'm scared. Help, I need an adult. you know, so it's like we're doing something right. And people are noticing. And, you know, since that article went live, I've had well over 350 submissions sent in. My slush pile is setting at 173, I think it was, when I looked a little bit ago. Yeah, and it is a wide range. I had to go through and update the submission guidelines just because. We are not looking at single author collections because they just, unfortunately, they don't sell. Even if they are so damn good that I enjoy reading every bit of it, they don't sell. You have to have a name to make something like that sell. Poetry collections, same kind of thing. Just not looking for them because they don't sell. It would have to be something of exception and special for me to look at it, you know. But one thing that really surprised me on the publishing side of things, that it honestly irks the ever-living crap out of me. I do not care about anything but the fiction. I care about the story you tell me. I want you to take me on an adventure that I enjoy, that I have fun. I don't want to leave. I want to stay there and keep going. I don't care about checking boxes.
It makes you forget about, it makes you forget about the world, you know.
Right, yeah. It's all about the fiction. But I'm getting these emails in, and they're listing off, I am this. It's like, I don't care, and I want to delete your email now. Because that's not the point. That is not the point. That is not what I'm looking for. I'm not checking boxes. Mm-hmm. It's great. Be you. I mean, be the absolute freak that you are. It's okay. We love you for that. But I don't care when it comes down to the fiction. And I'm honestly tempted to update my submission guidelines for that. Because it's just, I don't care. It's not going to drive me one way or another. I don't care about your long list of publications because I've probably still never heard of your name before. There are so many of us out there. There are thousands of us trying to get somewhere, and I've never heard of half of them that are making a living doing this.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but that's a personal peeve of mine.
I agree. If they start rattling off, you know, somebody starts babbling off a bunch of that, I'm like, you know, if that's what you're looking for, no.
Looking how good the story is,
The quality of writing, looking for the quality of writing. I'm looking for your, you know, give me your synopsis. Tell me a little bit about your story, where you see it going 5 years down the road. You know, is this a series? Is this not a series? Tell me about your characters. You know, the plot points. You know, tell me about these things. I don't care if you have 10,000 medals or you do this or you do that. I don't care. You know, as long as, you know, I care that you're not an asshole because, you know, like I don't want to deal with assholes. So, you know, you've got to be a good person. But other than that, I don't care, you know, what your personality is or what you do in your own time or whatever you know, you think. I care about the book, the writing, getting it out there.
Yeah.
That's what it points out.
One of those submissions, it was actually, it's going to be a reprint. He's already self-published it. And, you know, one thing that I'm finding is, like, people get out there, they're trying to do their thing, and they just don't know, don't have the connections, don't have the energy to push. I mean, everybody that knows me knows that I hustle, and I move, and I get it done because I know where I want to be. But not everybody's got my kind of energy to get things done. And I'm seeing that a lot of people, they're like, oh, you'll look at reprints. Oh, please take a look at my book, you know, because they tried the self-pub thing and they're just tired. They don't understand how to do the marketing. They don't understand this or that. They're introverted. Yeah. They don't want to deal with the networking. And I get it. But, you know, the pitch, the synopsis, we had one, Wingless by David James out of Australia. His pitch was so well, because I read every email that came in before I saved the file off. I copied the email, put it into the file itself so that it was there for whoever on the slush pile team read it. They'd have an idea and all this and that. You know, but his is just like, oh, I immediately marked it as I get to read this one because it already had me hooked. And I was going through the – dear God, there's so many, and they're still coming in emails, you know, as I'm sorting everything. But this one was just, it was a beautiful pitch, and it's like I started reading. I was 9 chapters in. I'm like, I don't even want to edit this. Holy crap. I turned around and started popping questions to him on email, and next thing you know, I'm sending him a contract because it was that well done. Nice. And it's just a beautiful series. He's got – the first two are done. Third book is in work. Already got the cover art set up for the first one. The cover art that he had, it was like, eh. And he went through a service. It wasn't a vanity press. It was actual publishing service that they've got down there where they will go through and they will edit for you. They will go ahead and publish it for you. And you do pay a fee, but all the royalties and everything come to you. They set you up with your account and all that kind of stuff. They do the editing, they do the cover art, and they do all that stuff to set it up, and then here you go.
So,
I guess in a way it is a vanity, but it's just a service. And just as soon as they get done with it and it's published, the rights revert. It's all the author, do your thing. You paid us for our services. Have fun.
Have a good day.
But, I'll take that. We'll get rid of that cover and we'll do something better. Because it was a
– yeah.
Yeah, okay. You know, thumbnail size, what's that? It's all kind of red and brown. Yeah. So, you know, we got something now that's going to stand out.
Right.
Nice.
That's something people don't think about all the time. It's that thumbnail size.
That
you
is,
know, it's
got to
look
good.
As a thumbnail,
small.
Too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, for, like, covers, you know, I might be taking a tangent here, but one thing that I really never understood so much, I mean, I kind of do, is, like, all these different countries, they have different cover art. And, yeah, you got different feels and different appeals in different countries, but at the same time, it's like, this is the story. It needs to be recognizable by its trademark. You know, that one image is that book. And, you know, like, okay, take the original Chronicles or Dragonlance Chronicles, the first three books. Those uh-huh. three covers uh-huh. will be those three covers forever in my head.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, because that's or some that have, you know, really iconic kind of elements in the cover that really attach the books, like the Hunger Games. When they publish those covers, they fit in beautifully with what they did and others.
Yes, and they were so simple.
Yeah, some of them are just timeless.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Completely timeless.
Yeah, because I see the 58 different editions of books.
The old Doom covers were pretty good.
Yeah.
Myself, mm-hmm. I mean, I know they've been done because of the new movies and stuff, but I mean, if you go back and look at the old Doom covers, they're pretty neat. Yeah, mm-hmm. they could maybe use a brush and that with some graphic, you know, put them in graphic art and stuff. But yeah, I mean, they, you know, some things are just mm-hmm. timeless.
Yeah, you always tend to get those tie-in covers when something becomes a series or a movie. They always reissue the books with the cover that ties to the show. And you know, that's obviously that's effective to an extent, but yeah, it does get muddled when you have 50 different covers of the same title out there. And certainly seen a few books like that, but yeah, there's some great work. I mean, some great talents out there cover wise, and yeah, you can get something that's effective and that works, and especially at half price like you did, go for it.
Was just a, like, whoa.
Yeah.
And you know, you can find good cover art out there. There's a lot of artists, and a lot use stock art. And, mm-hmm. you know, now with the AI stuff going on, a lot are using AI to generate elements that they're putting together for a main piece that include taking stock art and using it as a filter. One of my main artists, she'll take stock art off of Adobe stock. We'll run it as like a filter setup over on Midjourney to give it a particular feel and start putting all the pieces together and then run the whole thing as one so it all becomes seamless, you know. She's still putting hours of work into it by layering and putting all these elements together. It's not like it's just one piece and boom, you're done. And, you know.
Right.
It's just another tool in the toolbox, I think. A lot of people's worried about it's going to replace jobs and all that, but, you know, what was it, GarageBand? It didn't replace bands, did it?
Nope.
It was just another tool in the toolbox for people to use.
But there's people out there that have used it, you know, that it is, and that's why artists are so upset because – well, and it does take, the AI takes, when you're creating this from AI, like just giving it like options, say like ship, ghost, you know, something like that, and then it creates this image. It takes from all these different artists and their pieces, that's not given permission, but that it knows
styles,
and that it's seen and generates the art. And that's how that I've been explained from, you know, artists, actual graphic artists. And they say, you know, that's an invasion of their artwork and other artists, you know, that cannot give a permission, you know, anymore or whatever. But it is taking something and making it new, but they are concerned that it's going to take over. It's just like narration, too. I mean, there's Google Books now that, you know, there's a way to do audiobooks. And that it has voices, different voices, different tones, different – you're choosing an AI narrator. So it's actually taking away from narrators. And, you know, it's a whole lot cheaper to do it that way. So a lot of authors are going this route. Will you get the same quality? Probably not. No, you're not going to because you don't have the human aspect. You don't have the human, you know attributes to put to the story and the timing and all that. I mean, the computer's not going to get it all. So it's not going to be, you know, as good as a human. And editing will never be as good as a human. You know, it don't matter how much Grammarly or how much Word or whatever you use, you have to use it to help you know what you're writing and all that, but you can't depend on that. A lot of these writers that self-publish, they'll depend on Word or Grammarly to edit their manuscripts, and you can't. You just can't.
Oh,
they do not
no.
catch
Oh, God, no.
You know. And nope. I'm like, no,
you're just asking
on
for
AI.
A nightmare if that's what you're doing.
That's exactly
yeah.
right. And you can't depend on AI,
edit it
but
and
you
read
can
it yourself.
It.
And
yes.
well, you know, and
that's,
and that's just like the AI generated novels that are coming out now. Oh yeah, you hadn't heard about that yet?
Yeah.
And there's
oh,
one
yeah.
guy claiming that he's making yeah, thousands yeah. of dollars on these things. It's like, and it is mediocre at best writing. It's going to flood the market
yeah.
with a mediocre level of stuff that people are going to start to just ignore, which, you know, it sucks for that author that's been doing something that is in that range of skill level, because they're just going to get wiped out in the flood, where anybody above is just going to go ahead and excel. So, you know, there
right.
will be some minuses there, but right now with the way that stuff's set up, it really isn't going to replace, you know, Stephen King or Anne Rice or any of them.
No. It's never going to have the human aspect, put it that way. You know,
I'm
like
back.
I said, it's a great tool. Huh?
I got kicked off as I was talking about AI. Isn't that weird?
Big brother
I got disconnected.
And you are running the dashboard. I guess it automatically went over to me. I don't know. It didn't pop up. So.
I still had the dashboard. I still had the dashboard up, so we were still alive, but it kicked my phone line off. I was just going to say just real briefly. My point was I was talking about some of the deep fakes I've seen, and then also I was going to mention those, and then the other thing was I saw a mock movie trailer for a imagined movie about the video game Street Fighter, and they did it with a 1990s movie aesthetic, specifically as if this movie came from the 1990s. And I'm telling you, I would want to see this movie. I mean, it was completely AI generated, but the trailer was very compelling. So yeah, I mean, I'm just saying that there are some, you know, it could be a tool, but also there's some concerns as to the impact it may have.
Yeah.
But that's
it's okay to use it as a tool, but you've always got those, you know, nefarious people. They're going to take
yeah.
things.
Well, it doesn't matter what you do. They're always going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. They're always there lurking.
Yes.
Sandy had a question in the chat back up in here. I'm trying to find it. Oh, she said, this is to William. Do you wish to see the size of the audience potential sales that the author brings along? Is that info important for the person to include in their query? So is it important for them to tell you about the size of their audience, like social media presence and all that, followers, and potential sales?
Not really. I mean, in
okay.
the end, be blowing smoke up my ass.
Uh-huh.
I'm still going to go and I'm going to look at their websites. I'm going to weigh and measure them. I'm going to look at the content that I can see just to make sure they're not absolutely batshit crazy and I'm getting myself into a world of hurt.
Right.
Because that is something you got to take into account. Is this person going to go off the deep end and cause problems that I've got to deal with now?
Uh-huh.
You know?
Right.
This day and age,
right.
You got to kind of watch out. So I tend to look.
That's true.
You know, I really just skip that whole long list of, oh, okay, cool. Yeah, whatever. And I'll go and I'll actually look at their websites, their Twitter, their Facebook, Tumblr, whatever they've got, and take a look and see what's going on, see how many people they got, see how much activity they got. Because I can write something nice and pretty and fluff the shit out of it. Doesn't mean it's true.
Right. That's right. I agree.
I can see where it could be helpful, though, when you have somebody that's out there trolling a lot and getting into fights with everybody online, and how is that going to, obviously reflect on you as the press if you have that person as your author. I can definitely see where a little bit of survey and that kind of thing can come in handy.
Do I really want to deal with this? Do I really have the time to deal with this?
Yep.
I've already had to deal with some of that before. So that's one of those things that, I need to pay attention to this from here on.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
What's that? I don't want to deal with assholes.
Mm-hmm. Do what?
I said, I don't want to deal with assholes. That's just a prerequisite. I don't,
That's definitely a prerequisite.
If they're a-hole, I don't want to deal with them.
Mm-hmm. Well, so like software and stuff. Read submission guidelines. They're there for a reason. Follow them.
Yes.
And honestly, out of all the submission guidelines, I really have one rule out of that whole stack that really means anything to me. And if you can follow that, you're already winning. But I'm not going to tell you what it is. There's a lot of little hard and fast things to pay attention to. But there's one out there that's really important. If you can't follow that one stupid little rule, well, do I really want to deal with you? Are you going to be a prima donna?
Exactly.
I had for Trailer Park last year, for the Trailer Park Anthology, I had an author send me an email. Like, I'm going to write this for your Trailer Park Volume 2 Anthology, and it's going to be beautiful, but I'm going to be about 3 days late. My response, deadline is this. Good luck. I don't give a shit who you are. If you can't follow my guidelines, then go away. I ain't got time to deal with you. I got other stuff to do. I mean, even if it was Stephen King, I'd be like, dude, sorry, man. Go away. I'm not dealing with prima donnas, not dealing with bullshit. And see, I didn't make rank quickly for a reason in the military, because I just don't deal with bullshit well. I got in trouble a lot for my mouth. That's okay.
Oh, now I want to hear some of these stories at some point. we won't put you on the spot tonight, but yeah.
I got some good ones for you. That involved a three striper and officers. That turned out to be in my favor.
Nice. Holly, put a note on that for when we see him in person and get to hang out. I want to hear some of this.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
But yeah, but you're right. Yeah, it's the guidelines are if you have somebody that can't work with you on something that, some of those basic things, then they're going to be a problem later. It's a good, that's what I always tell people.
Some of these submissions, it blows my mind on the quality. I mean, it is a wide range, and I'm sure you guys have seen the same thing, things if you've gotten in.
Lord.
You get great prose and great dialogue, and it's just like you read and read and read, and you don't want to edit because you're sucked into it. But then you get these others, one paragraph, and you're scratching your eyes out.
Yeah, I'm
and,
like, what?
Just,
or grammar's
just
so bad.
Just spell
like
checker
that
alone would help this. But they didn't do that.
Right. Right.
And I don't – and see, that's one of those – I don't know – I've seen so many newbies from different starting points, and I really tried to help the baby authors, because it took me so long to find out anything about craft or business. And once I did find out, I was rabid about learning and rabid about sharing.
Uh-huh.
And
some of these baby authors that are sending things in, I don't know if it's lack of experience or it's ego. Because you know how, you know, you wrote that first thing and it's great and you can't kill your darlings because it's great, it's done, you don't have to touch it again, and we've all been there. I've been there. And if you say that you haven't, you're lying through your freaking teeth. Because we've all been there. The amount of editing on some of these that need to be done, I don't remember some of my first things that I sent in. They were probably just as bad. But look for ways to improve in the craft. Look at things like Writers of the Future. Try to get in there. If you're getting honorable mentions, silver honorable mentions, do them. The Writers of the Future has a free writing course that you can do that can help you to build your craft. Michael Nost, he does writing classes online. Jonathan Mayberry. There's a whole bunch of authors that do these online courses that might cost you like $20 for 4 hours of your time, and it's well worth it. Now, you know, on the flip side, on the business side of things, that $25 and that 4 hours, you write down that you were attending this course for 4 hours. You make sure to save your receipt for that $20 because that's now a tax write-off towards your authorship. As long as you're showing progress, they won't stop you. You know, I had $4,000 or more in write-offs last year between hotels and travel and all this and that.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It all
adds
up.
A lot of things you can write off. Yeah.
Easy.
You know, but if you're still in that baby stage of, you know, the ego is ruling everything, well, you know, you just got to get past that or you'll never get past that. And that's a hurdle that a lot of people just never do. They want to be that one. I wrote a story, and they'll talk about that just like Al Bundy talks about winning the championship football game for the rest of his life, you know. But that's finding your place. That's finding where you're happy with. And that's what a lot of people, I think, don't understand, you know. Where do you want to be with this? Is this a hobby? Because there's the hobbyists and there's the professionals. The hobbyists are the ones that are happy writing something every now and then. They're not on a schedule. They don't try to write every day. They do it when they feel like it. They do it when the muse is right. They do it when they have the time. Or they do NaNoWriMo or something. Right. And that's the true definition of the hobbyist writer. Then you have the professionals that they start writing at a certain time of day. You know, whether it's after dinner, they have their slated hour every day that they write, or, you know, I get up 0400 every morning. I write from 04 to 06 generally. Then I clock into the day job. I'm trying to get somewhere. I'm trying to get as much out there as I can so I can get my name out there, so I can get more readership, so I can make this into a living. You know, that's the difference. And once you decide where you're happy, then a lot of stress can get sloughed off, because if you're happy being that one that you might write a novel every year or every 2 years, don't worry about all the marketing. Don't worry about all this and that. You're doing it for the love of what you're doing with the craft. You're doing it for the smiles and the input that you're getting from friends, family, and those few readers that you do have. You know, don't stress about, oh, my God, I got to do this and this and this and this, unless you actually want to make it into a living. Then start stressing about all the marketing crap and all that junk.
Yeah, then you have to be serious.
Yeah, and you know, that's part of what I'll talk about in that the Power of You panel that that you got me slated for. I did that at Superstars, and it was a packed room. And it helped born a few of the babies. You know, finding their way and figuring out what they want to do with this, really.
Well, that's another thing, too, is if you're a new author, you know, you've got to get to these writing conventions. You've got to go to these workshops and panels and, you know, learn. You have to learn from people who have been there, who have made mistakes, who, you know what they're talking about. You know, your friends, your family, they can give you advice, but they're not writers.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, you're going to want to go to your peers, you know?
Yeah. And, if you're looking for a mom answer, don't bother sending anything to me, because I'm not going to give you a mom answer. I'm going to hurt your feelings.
Nope. Yo.
And those that don't know what a mom answer is, it's, you know, when you go in there and like, hey, what do you think of this? Oh, I like it. It's really great, Jimmy. Yeah, keep doing that. You're doing really good, Jimmy. No, you don't want that. That's the worst kind of advice or the worst kind of feedback you can ever have, if they're just placating you to make you feel good. If you want true, honest advice, get a peer to bleed on it hard and give you a true opinion, and it's going to hurt.
Yeah, it hurts. That's how you grow.
Right. Do you guys remember Jenny Wren? She was with our crew last year. I've made her cry more than a few times in the last couple months. And I finally did a full bleed through her entire novel, and it was painful.
Right.
She's got a lot of telling and little showing, but we're going to flip that around, because since she originally wrote that, she's done a couple of short stories. She's done, you know, she was one of the editors on Trailer Park 2. She's part of the Car Wars anthology. The story that she wrote for the Car Wars anthology, oh, my dear God, that I did not have to edit much at all. Her growth jumped, and I'm so proud. She took to heart those marks. It's that showing, not telling, and that one's a hard one to grasp. It really is. But a lot of us, especially our generation, we grew up on fiction that was telling. I mean, Anne McCaffrey, God love the woman. She is famous worldwide. I started reading the first book for Dragon Riders of Pern. I made it two chapters in, and I wasn't sure if I wanted to keep reading it or not, because it was all telling. But that was written in 69, I think. What's the copyright date on that one?
That's around there. Yeah.
So, you know, it comes from a different era of writing style. And now, you know, if you take those same things that are being told, and this is the way I was explaining to Jenny Wren, it's like you have an info dump, and everybody should know what an info dump is, where you're trying to convey this bit of information about this tech or this thing or this gun or whatever it is, and you want to pass that information along. You don't just blatantly drop it in there about this, about what it does and how it works. No, the character observes it working. The character observes this or smells this or does, you know, it's from the character's POV. Show me the character doing the thing, observing the thing, or at least in a dialogue conversation with another character, they explain what's going on. That's how you take an info dump from the old telling style of writing from the 1960s, 1970s. I mean, Heinlein, Silverberg, Anne McCaffrey, they all told, you know, L. Ron Hubbard, they all told back in those days. The show didn't start happening until about the mid-80s, really. And that's when they were really showing you what was going on from the perspective of the character, versus here's a big chunk of narrative of what's going on, and now here's a little bit of dialogue, and it's like, no, that just doesn't work anymore. It doesn't hold the attention of the readership.
No, because the attention spans have dropped, and people just don't want all that info. They want to read a story, get lost, and they want to keep. You can't let things lull now. You know, you got to have something going on. It's got to be going. They're going to put the book down and probably not going to return to it.
Yeah, Sandy. Yeah, Sword and Shannara. Yeah, there's telling all in it, but it's from that era.
Yeah.
And what was it? If know, doing that third person omniscient, you can still do a good story. Without the telling, you can still do it as a showing. But honestly, some of that out of like Battlefield Earth, L. Ron Hubbard's Battlefield Earth does some omniscient showing. It's a lot more third person, not quite close. But he does more showing than telling in that, and that was released in 82. I'm almost done with that. Dear God, that thing's a tome. It's freaking huge. But it's interesting to go back and see these older books and see how they related and how they stand up now. But, you know, if you picture yourself, it's just like a video game. First person is first person. You're looking through that character's eyes and everything that's going on, and you hear everything in their head because you're right there with them. You're tapped in. You're the VR helmet wearing character. Third person, you're just over their shoulder. You can kind of hear some things coming out the side of their head, but you're sitting there on their shoulder seeing everything going on. You know? And that's the easiest way to kind of differentiate. If you think about it like a video game, for where your position is, what are you hearing? What are you seeing from that POV? And don't head hop from character to character to character in a scene. You know, doesn't matter if the cinematic pass is nice and smooth. I've actually had Michael K. Falciani, he's one of our fantasy authors. He does a beautiful cinematic pass in the same scene between like 5, 6, 7 characters. Like, bad writer. Okay, no, pick one POV, and this is who's seeing everything in this scene. And I made him go back and rewrite the entire scene because of that. Because I missed it the first time around, and I went back through and was like, wait, son of a – no, you need to fix this now. just to keep with the formatting of today's standard. So, you know, you don't want to do that pass around cinematic thing. Am I rambling too much and going on tangents?
No. That makes perfect sense.
Loving this.
Yeah. Because I have to, as an editor, I've had to, you know, several writers I've worked with, I've had to pull them out of doing those shifts in the same scene between different POVs.
Oh,
and how it can just be
close to...
and not smooth. I mean, it can be really jarring to a reader when that's done.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've had to clean that up more than a few times.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's
and it all depends on the scene. It all depends on the writer and how invested you are already in the story. If you've been sucked in, odds go way down that you're going to start catching things because you got sucked in.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had to reread just because. I mean, Falciani's Raven and the Crow stuff, oh, my dear God, I'm waiting on him to get done with book 3 just so I can read it. And I might have to go out to Salt Lake City to beat him into submission. Okay, get back to your desk, stop doing whatever you're doing, and freaking write because I want to read this story. And, you know, that is honestly one of the best parts of the publishing side of things. I get to help bring amazing fiction to life. And I get first dibs on reading it, too.
Absolutely.
That's it.
That's a good feeling. Yeah, you run into that. And then there's, like you're talking about different kinds of writers. And then you got some that, you know, come in that have some rough edges in their craft, but they are they definitely have diamonds in the rough all over the place as far as you know, great plot and great character concepts and things like that, and they just need a little bit of mentoring and polishing to bring that out, and that's always a great feeling when you see them, you know, at the end of the process, and when they have a book that's got that polish and comes firing out with you know, presented it the way they, you know, originally envisioned it, but couldn't quite, you know, put it on the page because of the, you know, some of the, you know, limitations they had at the time, craft-wise. So that's always a great
feeling.
And
some, it's like maybe they're just so niche that they haven't took off, or they're cursed or something. Because, like, you know, I've got this one author from Ireland, John Drake. And he writes amazing comedy fiction. And his style is between Terry Pratchett and Douglas Adams. And I love everything he's written so far, but it just doesn't sell that great. And I can't figure out if it's my marketing or if it's just such a niche that it hasn't hooked enough people yet. Michael J. Allen, his Crossways novel. I mean, you take Big Trouble in Little China, put it on a sci-fi dimensional gateway, and multiply the chaos by about 10, it's freaking beautiful. I mean, it's sci-fi, it's comedy, it's snarky, and it's a nice little adventure all the way through. You don't want to put it down. At least I didn't. And I don't get why it doesn't sell. It's like the dude's cursed or something.
Mm-hmm.
I've sold a couple
that
copies.
Target audience. Yeah, audience. It's sometimes quite difficult, but once you do, they're hooked, you know, that they'll be, you know, buy another one you put out.
So, well, then there's the other way, I think, of looking at it. When you have trends, and a lot of writers will try to chase a trend, and by the time they, you know, are kind of have something for it, that trend has already shifted. And sometimes the writers that may not be catching on at the moment, they might be actually at the forefront of whatever the next thing might be. So, yeah, it's always timing is a tricky thing as far as some things.
And, you know,
so, yeah,
that's something the industry has tried to predict for decades. You know, always trying to jump on that next good thing before it really hits, you know, like zombies or sparkly vampires or whatever. And some predicted, some didn't. Some made money, some failed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's frustrating. And, you know, I can understand wanting to give up, because on the publishing side, it's frustrating as hell when you've got an amazing title with beautiful cover art and it just doesn't sell. So for the baby author sitting out there and it's their dream thing, but it's not going anywhere. No matter how much money they put into it, no matter how much promotion they're doing to it, it's just not going anywhere. It's like it's got to be soul shattering, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. Definitely.
And the thing, like Stephen said, the trends of the day, though, it may not sell. It may be the time, too. It may be the social climate. Things circle. If it don't sell now, it may, like, be a bestseller 5 years down the road. I mean, you just don't know. I mean, look at all the artists, the painters that even sell till they died, you know, so...
Outlander.
Well, there was
Outlander. She wrote most of that back in what, early 80s?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and see?
And it didn't get popular until like
moved.
2010.
Right.
Tight.
Yeah.
So
that's where independent press and small press can really be strong, though, because, obviously a major press is going to, you know, give you that brief window, and then if it doesn't sell, you know, it's going to move on. But a smaller press or independent press is going to have a little bit of a longer range, you know, territory for that kind of thing. And it can be, that's where that might be a strength.
As long as they've got the staying power. And, you know, for the baby authors out there listening, research before you submit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something could happen to me tomorrow and the partners decide they can't do what I used to do and they close down Three Ravens. Research where you're submitting to. Is this the right home for you? What have they done for their other authors? What's been their track record? How long have they been around? You know, don't just blatantly go, oh, I got a publisher. Well, you know, it's not necessarily a great thing because there's a lot of these authors that are sending me stuff that they have had horrible experiences with these other publishers that didn't do anything, never paid them, you know, all kinds of crap that I'm hearing. So absolutely, do your research. Don't just jump on the first opportunity that pops up. And please, dear God, for the love of everything, do not pay someone to publish you. That's a vanity press.
No, run in
the other direction.
Yeah, that's a no-no.
We see that all the time. Help the authors catch
that's
themselves.
That's a no-no.
Or making that mistake, you know, it happens a lot.
Yeah. And, you know, they're vultures in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
But they offer a service. That's what they're doing. They're legal. It's just really dirty down because they don't even edit. I mean, I've seen a couple of them. I had some stuff submitted to me, and actually somebody that wanted to write into our JTF series, I looked at his work after I'd edited his submission to me for the JTF universe, and the writing was first person present. I wanted to scratch my eyes out. Like, okay, you need to change it for this, and this to fit the universe and fit the market. And, you know, in the opening paragraph, his big gunnery sergeant was named Negron, who happened to be the big black gunnery sergeant. It's like, dude, you can't do that. What's wrong with you? Are you stupid or something? It's not going to fly in the market. But, you know, I went and did some research on him, and his writing was just the same. He's like, well, I've got five novels out already. It's like, really? And it's like this? It's like, yeah. And I went and looked, and sure enough, it was written like that. And I started looking at that publisher, and they were a vanity press. He paid them to publish his titles, put a nice, pretty cover on it, give him a web page, and they did no editing.
Yikes.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And they even followed up with like, reviews. That you could tell they were stilted reviews. They were just like copy paste, you know, from the list.
Wow.
It's a shame. We've heard it over and over, though. We did a Steve went did a speech a few years ago at this. What was it, the AARP, Tony Acri from Hydra, had come up.
Yeah.
Louisville. We
there.
Actually
yeah,
saved
there.
A woman $5,000. She was
getting
ready to get naked.
Pay five
for five
grand. Yeah, from one of these outfits.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wow.
That was the biggest one I've encountered so far. I've saved people from
five,
$2,000 and $3,000 before, but this one was like five.
and they posed as Christians. Christian vanity press.
Uh-huh. Yeah, even worse in my eyes, but as far as the ethics of it.
They're preying on a demographic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh.
That was rough.
That's the most I'd ever heard. But I'm like, why? With all the options you have today, if they don't, maybe they think they do edit. They just haven't done their homework because they are new, you know, authors, and they just don't know. So, and I think that's where they get them because they know they don't know, and they take advantage of that. And it's sad. It is, and it should be legal, but it's not because you sign a contract. Well, you know, it's legal.
Yeah. All right. And you know,
they figure that's on them. You know,
that also comes back to what are you willing to do? What are you willing to put up with? And what do you want out of it? A lot of people just want to write it and forget it. They don't even want to edit anything. And I've run into that with a few authors. And honestly, with Three Ravens, we want to help people grow. And if your attitude is, okay, well, just do whatever you need to do and go on with it. It's like, no, I don't really want to deal with you if that's the way your attitude's going to be because you're not going to grow for the next one. And I'm going to have to do just as much work on the edits again.
Exactly.
You know?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things is we really want to help people to grow. And with our community, we all talk. We all try to help each other take that step up. We help each other research, you know, even on our Discord server. And, you know, writing sprints start somewhere between 3 and 4 a.m. And all through the day, writing sprints are happening and everybody's helping each other research shit. So
Right.
It irks me when somebody's like, yeah, just do whatever you want to do. No, I don't want to look at edits. Yeah, no, I'm going to give this back to you and you can go away. And I'm not going to bother publishing you. I'm going to cancel the contract.
Right.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
You know, if you can't even bother to help yourself, do I really want to deal with you?
Right.
That's
Is the cost of bullshit ratio worth it?
Cost of bullshit ratio.
Well, But it is another misconception, because some authors are so introverted, they don't think that they're going – they think if I get published with a press, then I don't have to worry about selling my books. Well, that's not true, because you are your brand, and you have to be active in your marketing. You cannot depend on your press, and some presses – a lot of indie presses do no marketing whatsoever for you. That's not,
right.
It's not in their contract. I know a few, but it's not even in their contract. They will not market for you. It's straight up in there. So, you know, you have to read your contracts very carefully, but you have to be willing to market yourself too, to your social media. Build your social media. Build your public image. People want to see your face. They want to see the author. They want to meet you. They want to get your signature in the book. You know, you have to go to conventions and book events, and you have to get out there.
Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh. That's why I pulled you off to the side at Imaginarium last year. It's like, hey, we need to do some stuff here. Because, you know, as soon as the scheduled panels were over,
everyone disappeared. It was a ghost town. It's like, where's everybody at? Why aren't they down at the bar mingling? Where are the people trying to connect and network and get to know other people in the industry? You know, as long as y'all are still good with it and we're on the schedule, then, you know, Three Ravens Publishing is going to host the Hillbilly Court down there in the bar. Everybody
fantastic
can
segue.
Mingle.
There
you
know, we go.
We can mingle. We can talk, we can network, we can help each other out to learn things. If you don't network, you can't find these contacts to learn things. And it even comes down to research.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know nuclear physicists, I know neurosurgeons, I know archaeologists, and all I've got to do is say, hey, I'm working on this. This is the scenario. What do you think? And if they don't know, a lot of times they'll pass it off to a colleague that would know, and you can get some good, hard evidence type of information.
Yep.
You know, but again, you have to go to these conventions to go and meet these kind of people.
Oh, networking is invaluable.
The power,
I don't know how
power of networking.
People.
And what is it? We're doing the coffee clutch Saturday morning and Sunday morning, same kind of thing. So for those who don't drink.
Yep.
Or do the after-hours things because it's too late. And I understand.
Get up early.
I'm getting the point now that I get wore out early because I get up to butt crack early. But, you know, we're going to be doing coffee and tea in the morning. We'll sit around. We'll talk, shop. We'll network. And, you know, that's one of those opportunities of look at who's going to be at the convention. Who do you want to talk to that one of your peers that's in the same genre or into the same kind of things that you are so that you can learn something and maybe network and grow as an author? What are ways that you can take a step up in the industry? You know, Mr. Brooks is going to be there this year. I'm looking forward to actually getting to talk to him. I've heard he is one of the sweetest guys in the industry and a very good conversationalist. But I'm sure that he is going to be
absolutely
swamped.
And he's excited to be there.
Yeah.
Yep.
If I get the opportunity to buy him a drink, absolutely I'm going to buy him a drink. Because you know what? He has already put the footwork in. He has the scars from the years of work. The man deserves a drink just for me to be able to pick his brain for a few minutes. And that's how you network.
That is true.
Absolutely. And
You can't be shy. You got to be willing to talk to people.
Yeah, a good associate of his is also coming, Sean Speakman. He works closely with Terry on some stuff, and the author, editor, and publisher. And so, yeah, there's going to be a lot of people there that are you know, connected to the people that you want to meet too.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah,
literary agents, good marketers, yeah,
yep.
And mm-hmm. you know, back to the marketing and all that kind of stuff. Any baby authors out there that are thinking that as soon as they get a publishing contract with any publisher that thinks that they're going to get marketing done for them and all this and that, nope. Go ahead and go to your corner and start crying, because it's not going to happen. If you're a baby author going to get signed on with one of the standard trad pubs, the top five, or even in Tor or Bain, their marketing advertising budget for you is pretty much nothing.
Oh, yeah. Correct.
So you might as well go ahead and plan, just mm-hmm. like you would have anyways, to do your Facebook stuff, to do your own ads, to do your own marketing, because you're going to have to.
Uh-huh.
If you want to push your product, they're going to see what happens naturally and put the minimal amount of effort in. They might buy 1,000 copies to distribute. That half of those are going to get destroyed in the end because of the way the market – the more I learn about that side of the business, it's insane why they even – how they're even in business still, because of so much waste.
I know.
I absolutely prefer the POD method. But, you know, if you think it's your shit don't stink and you're going to get all these contracts and advertising and all this and that, well, you're fooling yourself. It's not going to happen unless you are the golden child and can be bringing in the cash. If you're
right
the Terry Brooks, if you're the Stephen King, or God, crap, brain work, brain just went stupid. Harry
Anne
Potter,
Rice.
Or Anne Rice,
or J.K. Rowling.
J.K. Rowling, that's it. You know, if you're one of them, yes, they're going to put money into you. They're going to invest in you because you're going to make them money. If you're that baby author, no, they're not, unless you have that thing. Now, see, in my networking, I was able to talk to a lot of these other upper echelon authors, Dave Farland being one of them. And Dave Farland used to be one of the purchasing editors, I think. I forgot which publisher. He helped to bring Twilight to life. And when that was in editing, he told them, if you want to make this something special, make it stand out, make it a bestseller, do something different. And because of what Dave Farland told the author, that's why we got Sparkly Frickin' Vampires.
Yay!
But it stood out, and it was different. You know,
So
I give her props because she took an old mythos and made it fresh. Yes, they sparkle. Yes, it may. But I'm sorry. I like them. But I'm a pure Lestat is my beloved. Lestat is my beloved. The old Victorian lore, the, you know, way back. That's my beloved. But I still like because she spended something new. And it's YA. And I like YA.
Folks, thank you for those of you listening to the live show. It is going to go over just a few minutes, so there will be bonus material, obviously. So, but thank you for listening to the live portion. I know it's about to run out on the live side, but yes, definitely tune in to get the rest of it when it'll be posted right after, and also on YouTube a few days after. But yes, we're going to cross over, William. Going over into the bonus territory.
Well, so back, you know, from my understanding, you know, Twilight didn't get the big push to start with either. They waited to see what it did.
No.
What was it? J.K. Rowling. She was rejected 20-some times from 20 different authors, and then somebody finally picked her up.
Oh, yeah. It's an ungodly amount of times she was rejected.
You know,
kept trying.
Persistence. And I don't even know why she was rejected so many times.
I don't either.
It could have just been that there was too much of that kind of fiction out there on the market already, and nobody thought it would sell because it's already flooded. But for whatever reason, it hooked readers just right. But that could have also been part of the marketing scheme of getting it out there, advertising it. They start putting out products. They put out swag, you know, things like that that start to build the interest. Saturday morning cartoon and the toy. Same kind of concept. If you can tie the two together and you start building the emotional bonds for a product line, it's a whole other thing. You know?
That's true.
Series logos. Those can be powerful tools down the road if you get one built up just right that's absolutely recognizable. I mean, how many Empire and Rebel Force logos have you seen on the back windows of cars? And you know exactly what they are because they're the branding logo for that.
Right.
Right.
You know, so part of your marketing should absolutely be something that's going to be recognizable. So if it takes off, everyone's going to know what the hell that is.
The Mando symbols and, you know, all that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, everybody knows what it is. You know, it's no different than McDonald's, Nike, Disney. You look at it, you know exactly what it is because you've been taught what it is. So as soon as it hooks
logo,
and it starts getting popular, you know, you recognize the brand.
Right.
And that's all part of some of the crap that I'll get to talk about in that Power of You thing.
Yeah.
You know, working
that's
on your personal fun. Brand, working on building yourself up. And I mean, sounding too crude, we're whores. We have to be. We're selling ourselves as much as we're selling our product because we are the product in the end.
Yep.
Agree.
You got to sell yourself. You are your brand.
Yep, and that's where you find those little things that stand out. You know, some authors, they wear a vest or they wear a top hat or, you know, something specific that stands out about them and is recognizable by their fans.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of that, you know, finding your brand, finding what works for you. I mean, everybody knows me by my cut. Well, that and the braids and the beard.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Your jacket.
Yep. So, you know, it's just that's just part of it.
That's true.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And the way you present yourself to people, you know, being warm, being available to chat, being, you know, wants to network and work those leads.
If you come off as nervous and your body language says that you're nervous, then people are going to kind of back off and they're going to leave you alone and they're not going to talk so much. If you come off as cynical or arrogant, well, people are going to back off because they really don't want to deal with your ass.
They don't want to talk to you at all. Mm-mm.
Yeah. And you know, some of that can be defense mechanism. Because if you've got an introvert that's out there trying to do their thing and it comes off as being egotistical because they're talking about, I did this and I did that and I did that, it could also be a defense mechanism.
Right.
Because we're all wired different. We're all, you know, our communication styles are all different. And, oh, my God. You start actually diving into communication and how we interpret it. It opens your eyes on how to interpret what people are doing. You know, the people watching. I love to sit back and people watch, where you watch everyone react and interact with each other and the environment around them. And you can start to predict what's going to happen as you're seeing things unfold. A perfect example of this. I was on a business trip with one of the salesmen for the company that I was working for. I was a design engineer with him. We had to go back down to Texas to a customer site to go look at this equipment. Oh, man, the salesmen were sitting there at the bar. And we're just having a drink, you know, just had dinner. And the body language of the two ladies across the bar from us, I just leaned over at the salesman and say, hey, Watch this. They're getting ready to roll their eyes at the dude over to the right. And you could already tell by his body language, he had a few too many, and he was already watching them. I mean, he just had that look. He kept looking at them. So he come up, started hitting on them. It's like they started to roll their eyes. Okay? Just keep watching, man. This is what's going to happen next. You know, I could already predict by watching what was going on, what was going to happen, and when they were getting up. He's like, dude, are you magic? What's going on? Like, no, man, it's observation. So back to the networking side of things, pay attention to communication. If you pay attention to observation, it can help you on the networking and getting you more comfortable with being out in the public and doing and talking. There's a lot of personal growth that goes into bringing an introvert out to becoming a limited time extrovert.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes a lot of personal growth and deep diving sometimes. It all depends on the person, though.
And some of us that are omniverts and kind of are a hybrid of both.
Yes.
Need the quiet time, and then are able to go out and be a little more extroverted, which is a whole other thing.
Be all over.
Yeah.
I'd probably fall into the omnivert. I mean, I can be loud and obnoxious and out front and everything. There's times I just want everybody to leave me alone. I just want to go hide. Leave me alone. Let me read. Let me write. Just go away.
Yep.
Yeah.
Let me do my thing.
I'm similar. I'm very similar.
Turn on the music, crank up the tunes, and just recharge, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And then I'm ready. Let's go out. Woo! You know, and I'm ready to network.
Yeah. So, you know.
And be loud.
When we get to Imaginarium, I really hope that people see that on the schedule and they come out, they talk. They network.
I do, too.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I hope that I can help some of the baby authors to learn and grow with that.
Right.
Right.
Well, I no doubt you will.
I don't even remember her name, but I wouldn't even mention it anyhow. You know, we had one toxic member last year that... any authors that latch onto a toxic peer,
mm-hmm.
I don't know why you would do that, but some people do, and they latch on and they keep trucking along with them, and you're doing yourself no favors.
Right.
Now, some of that can be with a grain of salt, because like John Scalzi, and I'll call him out on this. I had listened to a novella. I don't even remember the name of the series. It was this new series. It had this whole magic system and stuff like that, and it intrigued me. And I popped over to Twitter. I sent him or I tweeted with him in there. It's like, hey, well, what about this? Are we going to see any more of that? I mean, he kind of blew me off and told me to kind of piss off. Like, what the hell? Why would you do that?
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, talking to Bill Fawcett, he's like, well, okay, when did this happen? And I told him when, and, you know, I was trying to remember when it was. He's like, okay, well, there was some life stuff going on, so you probably caught him at the worst possible time, and you just happened to be the target that got blown up at. Like, okay.
Uh-oh.
Okay, benefit of the doubt, and Bill was going to try to introduce me at Dragon Con last year. It just didn't happen because of timing and all that. But so I'm going to give the man the benefit of the doubt. So, you know, if somebody initially looks toxic, give them the benefit, you know, weigh the possibility, unless this is their constant, their ego feeding, you know, something like that. Look at it with open eyes, really. Instead of just, you know, knee-jerk reaction, oh, screw you, I'm done with you. Because that's really what I did initially. It's like, well, hun, screw you. I don't care anymore. It doesn't matter how much I liked your stuff. Piss off. I'm going the other way.
Right.
But because somebody else in the industry was like, hey, now hold on. You know, this could have been a life thing. Like, oh, okay, that makes a lot of sense. Gotcha. You know. Am I rambling at this point? I don't even know.
No, I get it. That I just think best to not lash out regardless, though. I mean, you know, if you're going through one of those times, probably best just to back away from social media than you know, vent on folks that want to reach out to you. So I would say that.
Yeah. But
so,
help.
Yeah.
What do you got coming? Any baby authors?
Any baby authors? I was going to say, though, wait, we need to know out there, people listening, where they can find you, where they can find Free Ravens, where they can find you, baby authors can find you.
Yeah, and
you
I'd like to get
advice.
A picture because I know you're doing a lot of events. So, yeah, go ahead and give a map of some of your stuff coming up appearance-wise. I know you guys do a lot.
Oh, God. Okay, we'll be at LibertyCon here at the end of June over in Chattanooga. We'll be at Imaginarium in July up in Kentucky. I will be at DragonCon this year. As it's planned so far, we're doing a DragonCon release for Car Wars Anthology, Go Hard or Go Home. So we'll be doing panels on fiction. We'll be doing panels on Car Wars game. All kinds of fun stuff there. After that, then I will be at Chattacon in January as the Toastmaster for Chattacon. And then back to Superstars Writing Seminar in February. That right now is the schedule unless things start changing. We add some extra stuff to it. You can find my stuff at williamjosephroberts.com, or you can look at threeravenspublishing.com. For the baby authors that want a community that helps with growth, if you look at the sidebar on the Three Ravens page, you'll find a link to our Discord server. Come over, join in, you know, send all that kind of stuff. We've got a good community that helps each other. We run writing sprints. We help to boost each other. We help each other with research. It's just all kinds of good stuff. Go away, boy.
Fantastic.
Oldest child is in here picking at me.
Oh, that's awesome.
They're probably like, you're never up this late. Go to bed.
We don't need you stripping.
Okay, I'm on an interview. Go away, kid.
That's,
you know, those
great,
teenage
man.
Teenage years, it's a surprise that some teenagers made it past those years.
That's a tough mind, man.
Oh, that's too funny. Well,
I love all these gentle folks today. I was never a gentle parent.
No.
I'm still not a gentle parent. Ask them. They're adults.
Not,
they'll still
not,
tell you. Nope.
Not your style. Yeah, absolutely not. But, well, is there anything that we did not cover? I love tonight because we got to hear a lot of things that younger authors need to hear. There's a lot of real talk, as I call it. Which was, that's why I was like, this is great stuff. So I hope a lot of them do listen and take heed to a lot of the points you made. But is there anything that we didn't cover as far as the Three Ravens and your personal releases? Anything that you want to mention before we let you get some rest?
Yeah. I mean, go sign up at the Three Ravens website for the newsletter so you can keep up with what's going on. As soon as the Kickstarter comes out, you know, if we can make that fund, that would be beautiful. And I'm going to set up a bunch of stretch goals on that Kickstarter for extra swag and things like that the fandom is going to enjoy. for the baby authors that are trying to do something and figure things out, we have a, I don't even know how many. We got a nice list of open calls for different genres. Look on the website. We tried to give a little bit of feedback versus nothing, just so you can have some kind of growth point. So, you know, I know, well, the post-apocalyptic, it's already closed now, but we got fantasy, we got dark fantasy, we got a cryptic horror, yeah.
Nice.
There's a whole list of anthologies that are open right now. So go check those out. You know, it's an opportunity to get your name out there. And at minimum, we try to give a little bit of feedback on why you were rejected.
That's invaluable, yeah, to authors.
Yeah, because, you know, the big boys, they really don't do it. And I understand why, because it's a matter of time.
Yeah, numbers and sheer volume.
Right.
And, you know,
I get that.
With that flood of submissions we got in, I actually set up we've accepted you into the slush pile, blah, 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 here. We'll let you know what we think. Or, I'm sorry, the slush pile review editors did not find this hooking, or, you know, I actually found myself doing that because we had so much going on so quick and I didn't have time to write a personal message to each one. So I understand why the big boys don't, and why, you know, you could have turned it in 3 years ago and still never heard anything back from it, and probably never will.
Probably never will.
Yeah, you know, it ends up in the trash can or forgotten about, set to the side. I know there was one novel that Bane missed out on because it sat in the slush pile and the author went ahead and self-published it and made a good chunk of money on it.
Right.
You know, it just happens.
It happens.
But, I can understand why a lot of that stuff happens, because I'm seeing it now. I think that's about it.
All right. Well, this has been an awesome visit, and definitely one that I hope a lot of writers do get to hear. But thank you for joining us tonight. It's been fantastic, and I'll let Holly close it out with you here. But thanks for joining us tonight, William. It was great.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, everything you've brought to the table tonight and shared with us has been, you know, very valuable for our listeners and gave them something to think about, whether they are the baby writer or, you know, experienced. You gave a lot of information, a lot of good tips. So, yeah, thanks, man. Thanks for coming on. And, everybody, you can see him at Imaginarium.
Yep, Imaginarium is going to be fun this year.
Yeah, it is. Very fun. But yeah, thanks for coming on the show. Don't be a stranger. We'll definitely have to catch up with you again later in the year and see how all those cons went and what else, you know, you've got new, maybe ready for the holidays. There you go.
Yeah.
Catch up with you. But yeah.
Oh, yes.
For our listeners out there, I'm going to close it out with, you know, stay creative, stay aware. Realize you are your brand. You know, you have to sell your product. You are your brand. And attend Mr. Roberts' panels at Imaginarium. Learn a lot. And be creative this weekend, the rest of the week. Write. And join us next Wednesday, same time, same place, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Another great creative. Another great discussion.